Good evening and welcome to this Wednesday webcast with me, Scott Cassin-Rennie, himself,
Al Coates,
and our special guest tonight is a lovely lady from the internet. I'm sure she's real in real life as well. We're delighted to welcome Charlotte Jenkins from the Beacon Family Services. Good evening, Charlotte.
Good evening, Scott and Al. It's nice to be here.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. I can't believe that was the worst introduction for a lady off the internet.
Excuse me, can I just admit something? I only started following Charlotte yesterday on Twitter.
Yeah.
Shame
on
you.
That's naughty. That's naughty.
It is.
I don't know why. Well, anyway, that's the side. We can fight that one out after we've finished.
We'll leave that for the end when we've turned off the stream. Charlotte, could you give an introduction to who you are and kind of, we're talking a bit about challenging violent and aggressive behaviour, child-parent violence, adolescent parent, all of those, you know, all of that stuff. Would you be able to give us a sort of a description of who you are? Because you're kind of, you've got a, it's, you know, well, who are you and why are we talking to you?
Who am I? That's quite a question, isn't
Existential.
It?
Existential. You're the lady off the internet.
That's going to be in the show notes.
put it on your LinkedIn.
In the show notes. Yeah.
Yes, I think I'd like to maybe put some flesh on those bones of who I actually am. Yes. So I'm first and foremost, I'm a social worker. Trained as a social worker, and I've worked for many years in all kinds of social work. So started in family support and homelessness and youth homelessness. I've worked across safeguarding and child protection and then in adoption, fostering and kinship care. So working for local authorities. And at some point, I left to begin working independently. And I was working independently, delivering TheraPlay. I was a TheraPlay practitioner.
Yeah.
And found that the kind of support that I was offering became of interest to more than adoptive and fostering families, far wider range of families, but families who didn't have access to funding to get support. Yeah. I'm based in Birmingham, and you know, at the time the statistics were like 70% of children who were referred to CAMHS weren't getting a service. They weren't being seen.
That's awful.
And so in response, I set up Beacon Family Services, which is a not-for-profit, and it was very much a local organisation. We developed a model of TheraPlay for families that was funded and delivered it on a group basis. So massively reduced the cost.
Of course, yeah.
Offered a lifeline to families that needed some input. And we met all sorts of families. And then, of course, the pandemic hit. And I think that's where Beacon Family Services became a slightly more on the internet and well-known organisation. Because we produced a number of resources that were TheraPlay and polyvagal based, which were intended initially to help our families that we were working with to be supported remotely, but have actually developed a life of their own. And so I think what a lot of people know me for now is for our How Are You Feeling model, which introduces polyvagal theory and the idea that that all of us exist in several different states, and we move about between those states of safe, struggling and drowning. And really what the work we do is helping children and families find their way to feeling safe. So
you made that sound really simple.
Well, that was actually what the piece of work was about, was that I got really interested in something called polyvagal theory, which if you say that word to people, if you pick up any of the books about it, just seems so complicated. But actually, I found tied together a lot of what I had experienced as a social worker, what I'd learned in training therapeutically. I'm trained in TheraPlay, DDP, and something called sensory attachment intervention. And it kind of runs through all of those and helps me make sense of what's happening to me, parents, for children.
Sorry, I cut you off there. I thought you'd stop, but you'd got a frog in your throat.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, is there like a layman's explanation of what the polyvagal theory is? Because, I mean, I've heard of it. I kind of get it a little bit, but I'm just not, you know, I'm not there with my understanding of it.
I can do my layman's. So polyvagal theory is basically... It's a theory that thinks about how we process the information that we receive about through our senses about the world. So at all times, you know, as humans, we've got these kind of competing drives to both keep ourselves safe and survive in the world, but also to connect, make relationships. And they kind of pull and push against one another, that actually we need to kind of keep them in balance to really function well. And actually, when we're feeling safe and when we're connected, you know, that's when we explore the world, that's when things feel good. But as we start to perceive any kind of sense of danger around us, and that comes from kind of different places. So it might be how we're interpreting how we relate to others. It might be what's happening around us. It might be what's happening within us. So kind of all the time our body's processing that kind of information, and we have to decide what to do with it. And actually, if we feel unsafe, we might move into a kind of more mobilized fight or flight state. And actually, if that doesn't keep us safe, we start to shut down. And actually, we're always moving between those. So it's a nice theory because it applies to the big stuff. It applies to big stuff like children who've experienced abuse and neglect. Actually, they really struggle to feel safe.
Yeah.
But equally, it applies to making sense of the fact that when I'm hungry, I get a little bit grumpy. Yeah, you know, so it explains hangry, it explains, and that's what I like about it is that, you know, it helps you really make sense of some of the stuff that happens automatically within your autonomic nervous system that, you know, actually in terms of what I'm here to talk about is really helpful.
Thank you.
Excellent. And so that's a really nice segue really into, you know, that lady off the internet, she's freaking awesome.
That woman off the internet, she's good, isn't she?
Aye, that woman off the internet.
That is going to haunt me for the rest of my life.
That woman on the internet. I'll have to see what she does with your friend request, Scott.
Blocked.
I was saying in my mental address book, you might have changed to that woman off the internet and I might actually lose your name. So that could be a problem. It's a phenomenon I've had before. But thinking about the reason I asked you on is because we've done a little bit of, we collaborated a little bit on working and trying to work with social workers.
Yeah.
And sort of just kind of spread our knowledge of what's going on in children when their behavior sort of tips into aggression and violence in the home. And that's not exclusively to adopted children or foster children or kinship care. And if anything, it's overrepresented within those communities, but the biggest communities out there, isn't it? Like you're saying, 70% of children couldn't get support through CAMHS. So tell me a little bit about your experience of working with families where that experience of children whose behavior kind of tips into violence and aggression.
So, I mean, I suppose for me, it's kind of the issue as a social worker that's been completely consistent through my career, that this is something that families talk about. I think when I think about it, and I remember back to being a newly qualified social worker, and kind of being, you know, in the office and taking calls on duty or meeting families that were talking about this stuff going on. You know, it was just, it was so much to take in, because actually those bits about what must be happening, you know, first of all, for parents to pick up the phone and need to ring a social worker and say, you know, actually things are, you know, things are really difficult in our family. And you know, they'd be asking different things. They'd, you know, present in different ways. Sometimes people were asking for help. Sometimes people were like right at the end of their tether saying, we can't go through the weekend unless you come and you come and take our child away, which is just a huge thing for a parent to feel. That took a lot to process.
Yeah, I mean, I think often you see sort of like a glib reaction to that kind of language, and you think, how do you get from being a parent to being a point where take my child away?
Yes, absolutely.
It's incomprehensible. It's so far outside of most people's experience, or a lot of people's experience, then you can't compute it, can you? So like you say, Friday afternoon duty call, take my child away.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you've got to kind of try and make some sense of what's going on. And I mean, you tended to have, you know, so much going on, so much, you know, feeling on behalf of the parents, child, you know, there tended to be family histories, but, you know, like a real, you know, often there was a real sense of crisis. So, you know, there was that stuff. And then there was kind of the other stuff that you get to know the kids and start to learn their stories and kind of hear their feelings as well. And that added another layer that, you know, actually, you know, I think there's some kind of, there's a whole set of values that, you know, is what I'm really talking about here. There's a whole set of values at play, isn't there, about what we think parenting is about. How we think children should behave and what we think should happen when they don't behave in that way. Sense that children are deliberate in their actions, and that, you know, actually if you put some kind of sanction or punishment in place, then it would stop. And if that doesn't change the child's behavior, then actually, you know, what's going on with these parents? And actually all that stuff, you know, was, you know, gets thrown up in the air when you meet families and start to talk to the children and parents about what's really happening.
Can I ask you? I don't want to cut across you, but I've got lots of questions. When in your social work training, then, so you talked about you being a newly qualified. Did you get trained in parenting? How to be a good parent? What a good parent looks like?
Not really. No. I think we learn a lot of theories. I was really lucky in that when I trained, there was such a thing as family centres. So actually, I did one of my placements in a family centre. So, you know, parents coming and bringing childcare and getting support themselves. And there were some parenting courses going on. I saw a bit of that in practice, but I can't say there was kind of ever a module. And we did talk about values and what we assume and think about that a lot as social workers. But actually, when we start to think about all the assumptions we make about parents and children, that's
One of the things I think that often a lot of the families I talk about is a sense of really feeling judged for not being a good enough parent. Yeah. I remember you, Scott, you've probably had that. I know I've judged you, Scott. No, just teasing.
No, you're not. And I judge you right back.
Excellent.
No, but it's interesting because I think that doesn't stop at just social work either. I think that, you know, when I think back to some of the work I did when I was at Adoption UK, in terms of the peer support stuff, you had to physically see families, how they worked together to understand what they were going through. Because, you know, you could stand and talk to a parent about how crappy everything was at home, and their child would be, you know, mingling in the background, and then all of a sudden crash, bang, wallop, and you would see it with your own eyes that actually this isn't, you know, this isn't necessarily parenting at all. And you know, one parent does stick to mind, come to mind when I'm talking about that, but it's really, like, it's really evident. And I think that, like Charlotte says, you can do it a little bit differently and not judge and try to help. I mean, like I say, I'm not a social worker, so it's kind of a peer thing for me, but certainly, you know, judgment is a big thing, you know, massive thing. You know, when we were 2 years in and offered the Webster Stratton parenting course, we kind of just, I mean, literally laughed in their faces, because we were like, I'm sorry, but, you know, we're 2 years into this. The Webster Stratton isn't going to, you know, make, you know, we're on a different level. No offense to the Webster Stratton course, because it's useful for a lot of people, but it just wasn't useful for us. So there's a lot going on here with that, isn't there?
Yeah, because everyone's unique, aren't they? The kids are unique, we're unique, we're like this bundle of our experiences, how we're feeling that particular day. Yeah.
So as a social worker coming into that, and you as a newly qualified, I mean, I've never had that experience in the sense that I've never worked in a local authority. I've never been part of a children and families team. So I've never been drawn in to that. But I can kind of, I can empathise from the other perspective, and often people talk to me. But you know, you were at the kind of the sharp point, or pointy end, and people say, you've got to go in and you've got to start to kind of make sense of this.
Yeah.
And how, you know, how did you make sense of it? And do you think we've got a workforce that's equipped to do that?
Well, I think it was really, I found it really hard, because often I was dealing with like real competing pressures. So it was the fact of, what were the family asking for? And did the local authority kind of have the resources to meet that?
That's a really, that's like a perfect answer.
Yeah.
So actually, that's a lot of what you ended up dealing with. And so actually, it's been later in my career that I've kind of been able to do that processing about, hang on, what was the real stuff that was going on? And, you know, I look back at, you know, some of the families I've worked with over the years, and you know, I'm not sure that there's any good answer. So, you know, families would ask for respite, and, you know, sometimes that wasn't possible, and for resource-led reasons. And actually, you'd watch the family blow apart because they really did need that. And then other times, you'd put the respite in, but actually that meant that somehow or other you couldn't bring the family back together. You know, children ended up staying in care. Right. So, you know, actually, there isn't one good answer. Especially not when you're led by the kind of, are the resources there or not?
Yeah.
You know, actually really good, you know, really good stuff about actually really trying to get to know what is happening for everyone. And I think this bit that we were just dancing around then, which is about actually staying out of judgment and just trying to accept that this is where these parents and this family are at the moment.
Yeah, I recall an incident. I've got lots of stories, but I'll try and keep to the printable ones. I remember a social worker saying to Paula and I, in the midst of really difficult circumstances, just saying to us, you know, I just don't think you're very good with teenagers, and. And, you know, I can remember like almost disassociating, thinking I have no response that is acceptable in this situation.
Yeah.
Because it just felt so insensitive or so glib almost.
Yeah. Kind of like, what's the filter going on there?
Yeah. You came to help and you've done that to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So So do you find that, I mean, I work with a lot of social workers, one of the thing, and talk to a lot of them, and we did the round table event, didn't we, together, which was fantastic. Yeah. And we got a lot of social workers. Yeah, yeah. I think we got more than people were expecting, didn't we? Social workers came.
And a really lovely mix, you know, of social workers from so many different teams and places, which the children with disabilities teams, fostering, adoption,
which is interesting in of itself, because I think often it's kind of pigeonholed as a as an adoption issue, because we're shouting the loudest. But one thing I got was that sometimes people just having a real sense of not knowing what to do, and not just, you know, I think, I'm not sure that was expressed explicitly by everyone, but a lot of people, there was this theme of just tell us what to do. How do we start to push? So what advice are you giving to sort of practitioners who are coming to you?
Well, I think the thing that, I think the thing that I noticed most is that actually, you know, the other part that I haven't talked about yet, you know, is seeing what parents will cope with. And their absolute commitment to their child in the face of what is sometimes really, really difficult, you know, behaviours that's you know, causing real physical harm to members of the family, to the home, and all these things. So I think it's kind of trying to hold on to that part, that actually there's some relationships at the heart of this, and those relationships need to be made sense of. And, you know, our social work, I always think about our social work values, which, you know, are about, you know, valuing individuals, valuing diversity, about, co-production, about, you know, kind of all these things. So this bit about actually just using our basic listening skills, and trying to hear and gather information, because often it's when we jump into crisis that actually we don't help, has been my experience, that actually if you can try and slow things down and just say, let's make some sense, first of all, let's do this thing that in social work we call assessment, but let's actually do it in a helpful way, not a, I've got a form to fill in. This has got to be done in this time scale, which I know is the reality, but actually to really use that as a chance to get to know and make sense of what's really happening for the family before you get into, well, actually this is what's needed, because it just so happens that we're running a course on this, so you'll have to go and do that.
Do you think, that just sort of confirms everything that I've probably been told by families, is that, you know, that just listen, believe us. That's the start point for a lot of people, is just, you know, just accept that we're telling you the truth, that things are not as they should be.
I'm really respecting that, Al, because it's really, really hard to tell. I think it's really hard to tell. And I think as my, you know, as I've moved into different work through my career, I'm working with foster carers and adopters, actually that moment of telling is about, you know, real trust. And so, you know, there's a lot of shame caught up with it all, I think.
I mean, Scott, you were working in peer organisations, and you've much more kind of plugged into the communities. And is that, what are people saying to you in relation to how they feel about the responses they're getting from social workers?
You know yourself, Al, because you're on both sides of the fence, that it's really hard. Excuse me. Because you do, you feel that a social work involvement is it's failure in some ways. I think I will be blunt to say, I think it's moved on a lot, but I think a lot of that is to do, and a lot of it's to do with the ASF, because we've been able to access things that are not necessarily just social work driven. And I think that, you know, when I think back to 2007 with my older two children, therapies, counselling, all that sort of stuff wasn't really a thing. Whereas now with Jacob, at, 2014, he was placed. It was very much right. Okay, so this is what, this is what's going to happen in the adoption support plan, and this is what we can access. And then the ASF came along and really kind of validated all that. So I think that a lot of parents do still feel perhaps failure when they're asking for help. Or they did, should I say, but I think it's moved on a little bit. And I think, judgment seems to be the key words in some ways tonight. If you've got a social worker who's not non-judgmental and just wants to help, then that makes a big difference. But you could have the best relationship in the world, and it could just take one sentence just to put you off to, wherever it is that you're headed, because actually you're still feeling insecure as a parent that you've done something wrong. And I'm not saying that every parent gets it right every time. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is that if you're in doubt about yourself already, you don't need that kind of, being labored at you. And that is definitely the kind of the themes that I hear working in the community as well.
Yeah, I think we're moving much more towards, an acceptance that plans and goals and outcomes, are not the way to help parents. It's kind of taking time and building those trusting relationships.
Yeah.
I think that's I think you're probably right that the ASF has, allowed many, many social workers to really be able to train and gather new information. I wonder, whether, I do hear bits from social workers who are working in children with disabilities teams, and I'm thinking about the world of families who we might put under the umbrella of their children have SEND needs. Whether they don't necessarily have the same level of access to kind of therapeutic support.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the saving graces of the adoption community is that, and this sounds really, it's a really difficult sentence to get out, but often as an adoptive parent, I can say, hang on, this isn't me. I can say, that there was 4 years before I arrived that is maybe that's the root of some of this behaviour. Whereas if you're a parent of a child your biological child, you haven't got that. And so it's a much more, you have to look in, you probably feel judged much more than other, which leads me sort of to my time. And next question is, one of the things I've seen, and you've seen this, Scott, as well, is that parents starting to unravel and then they start to become part of the problem. And that, as a social worker coming into an environment where you go, actually a parent's parenting is impacted by the behavior of the child, and it's then all of a sudden it becomes this ball of spaghetti. Where does the child start? Where's the parent? The maladaptive behavior. Is that something you see when your people come to you going, fix my child? It's all them. It's them. There's something wrong with them.
It's my child. It's all them. What can you do about that? I suppose that's a big thing that we always say, in my work here at Beacon, that actually we work on relationships. We don't diagnose, we don't fix. Work on relationships. We build and strengthen. But I do think that in the world of social work, that's much harder because, there is a sense that it's about children. I can remember sitting in a child protection review, and it really makes me cringe now. But the reviewing officer used to say to parents, actually, we're here to talk about, your child. Actually, these things might be going on for you, but actually, we need to focus on your child. And actually, you can't. Because actually, unless you look after the parent, you can't. Yeah. They're not going to look after the child. And actually, the parents are our resource. In a world where there are really limited resources, the resource we've got that is most unlimited is parents' carers. So we need to look after them. I think across children's social work, that's a really, really big issue, this part about you know, how does that get resourced? Parents,
because it's really tricky.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, I mean, you know, we, you know, don't get me wrong, the ASF is, I mean, it's here and it's fantastic to have in terms of funding what we need as parents of children who've been adopted and for the children as well. But if we'd invested that in kind of some of the families that really needed the help from early on before a child was removed, then things could have been so much different.
Yes.
For them and for their children. And, you know, you're not going to get it, again, you're not going to get it right every time because, you know, some people can't really make that change until, you know, much later on. And at that point, the child has to be removed or, you know, placed into permanence or whatever. But, you know, if that had kind of been a, more of a focus, you know, you were talking about children's centres earlier, Charlotte, you know, yeah. They were pulled or they've been pulled or they've been, you know, there's very few of them about now. Yeah. You know, there's kind of this lack of investment in families generally,
yeah.
You know, and now we're talking about fuel bills and, you know, all this kind of child poverty, etc. And it's all going to have a further impact on the number of children who come into the care system.
Yeah. Absolutely. Poverty is one of the biggest issues, isn't it? Because actually poverty causes so much stress and amplifies any difficulties that a family's having. And interestingly, with what you're saying, what we're finding at Beacon Family Services is that actually I feel like I work at both ends of the spectrum at the moment, that actually we do a lot of very specialist work supporting adoptive families. But equally, the other part of our work, which is funded, is alongside our early help partnership. And really interestingly, it's the same ideas and the same work that we're doing at either end, because actually, you know, it's...
But that's fabulous to hear. That's fabulous to hear that there is some stuff going on that, you know, is helping families. So fab. Well done, whoever funds that and Beacon House.
I'm conscious this is a conversation that if we were sat around a pub having a drink, we would just go on for hours about this. And there's so much that you feel like, and then there's another thing, and there's layers upon layers upon layers. And I'm conscious of the time; it's 9:25. But so one of the questions I wanted to ask is: Have you seen success as a really crappy word for it, but are you seeing improvement in families? Yeah, improvement. There you go. Wow.
High five.
High five. You could be a social worker. honorary social worker.
No.
So are you seeing when, because I think that there's no one magic wand, is there? But are you seeing when you're able to support families however they need with whatever you've got, are you seeing the situations turned around?
Yeah. Improved? Definitely. I mean, I think across the board that we know a lot more. So actually, I think, you know, whilst there's, you know, there is still places where there hasn't been the level of training and support for social workers that is needed, you know. I would argue that social workers should be trained, you know, in this as a topic. If you're going to work with children and families, it should be part of our core training to think about this as an issue. I think that it's something that there should be, you know, guidance for us as social workers, which is something we're working with Baswa on now.
As if by magic.
As if by magic, yeah. I think there's a sense that people are talking, you know, about the issue, that there isn't just a sense of, oh my goodness, it's one of these really difficult situations. It's more of a sense of actually this is something that there's a conversation starting to happen about. And there's lots of approaches out there that you hear people talking about. And I mean, you know, I know that you're an MDR practitioner, but like actually so many people know about MDR now. And, it, you know, whilst, you know, that's not going to be the right solution for everyone, just kind of the idea that people feel that, you know, that there are options and there are ideas, I think is really, really important.
Because I think you work, you do DDP, don't you, in therapy, and there's kind of, when you strip these away from all of the jargon that comes with the different models and techniques, you find a lot of really core principles underneath, don't you? Which is about relationships, it's about respect, it's about boundaries, it's about, you know, and like at the very beginning you were talking about polyvagal theory, about the impact on children, their capacity to regulate themselves, which I think I've been slightly worried about some of the trends where I've seen that actually what is going on in children doesn't matter. You've got to just do it a certain way. You've got, which is back to this manualized approach. Have you seen much of that, you know, in your work?
Yeah, I think there's something for social workers about often they're juggling and going so fast, aren't they, with the amount of work that they have to do. But I think that growing sense that, you know, as you're saying, that you know, these approaches are about parents and supporting parents and kind of really understanding children. It's great, but I think that there's kind of a long way to go in us, you know, really seeing that in a, you know, in a complete way. And, you know, and I think it's really hard for social workers because, you know, actually, I know we're right at the end and I'm opening up a huge big
go for it.
But actually, we've seen some like really, really, really tragic child deaths recently. And, you know, actually that always raises the expectation of social workers to do better. You know, I think his perception puts a great degree of pressure on them to go faster, to work it out, when actually often
I mean, it's complicated because I think it was the language that was used for us. Nadeem Zahawi said, if there's an inkling that there's any harm to a child, I mean, inkling is the least technical word you could get in the world.
Yeah.
An inkling of harm. But you're working into a child, a situation where a child has been violent.
Yeah.
There's harm everywhere. And absolutely. So often services are brought in because a child is, you know, a child's come at a parent's pushed back, a child's got hurt, and then the parent's under child protection investigation.
And the other children in the household amidst that, especially if there's younger children.
And so there's a huge inkling of harm everywhere, but no one's, like you said, then, so trying to focus on any one individual, you're missing two or three others at least.
Yes.
It's just really complicated, isn't it?
It's a really complicated act, isn't it, of balancing and managing risk alongside kind of having a longer-term view about what's going to support this family.
Yeah, and I, you know, we don't get many social workers on, as we said at the beginning, and I think one of the difficulties is because it is such a nuanced conversation, because I've been in situations, probably like you, I've gone in, you can't prejudge anything because you just don't know what's going on in any given situation.
Yeah.
And sometimes at the root of it is really odd things about parenting, but you don't want to judge parents, but actually in some ways that's the only thing you can sometimes change. And that's really complicated, isn't it?
And and that's what's at the kind of heart of social work, is the real dilemma is that actually we practice being non-judgmental, but actually we do have to make judgments.
I know. Yeah. It's hard, isn't it?
I love that quote. I remember using it in an essay when I was doing my final year, because it is that, how do you make judgments in a non-judgmental way?
Yeah.
Discuss. You just can't do it, can you? So what are you up to? Now, I have to confess, I have this amazing feeling of deja vu, Scott. Do I consistently get Beacon House and Beacon Family Services confused?
Yeah, and I do as well.
Yeah.
And right. I apologise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have no excuses.
Why is there two places with the same name? I'm joking, but...
well, maybe this is my moment to explain. I mean, you know.
Please do.
Our name Beacon comes from my place is situated on Beacon Road. So much like Beacon House, obviously based in Beacon House. It just so happened, you know, how great the idea of having a beacon, great minds think alike, you know, a beacon kind of represents what we do. And I guess we're similar. I mean, I think, we were quite local in West Midlands based, whereas Beacon House are very well known as a national treasure, aren't they, with their amazing sources?
I mean, if I was you, I'd just piggyback on that. I would. Dine on that as far as you can.
I don't think they're the only ones that are kind of, and you claim national treasure for them. I mean, we had a comment from someone who's nowhere near you saying that you're amazing. So I don't think it's just Beacon House or amazing. And I think actually it's nice to have that kind of connection in the name anyway, because actually you are doing not the same thing, but very kind of similar. You've got the same kind of, you're having the same impact, shall we say. And I think that's what we're looking for. Yeah. We're not looking at names. We don't judge on names.
We should maybe change the name of our podcast to the Joe Rogan Adoption and Fostering Podcast.
No, we must not.
And then maybe we would get...
I was going to say, Scott, you know, the marketing bit is probably... it's probably a marketeer's nightmare, isn't it? But, you know, we work in a world where, as you say, we're all trying to get good support and help to people.
Yeah.
Speaking of which then, a little, please give us a plug. Where can people kind of access what you do? I mean, you're probably at capacity, aren't you? So...
Well, so if people want to access us, there's a number of ways they can. So our website is beaconservices.org.uk. We've got a blog over on the website with kind of lots of tips, advice, help, discussion about parenting. You can buy our resources. So our Polybagel and TheraPlay based resources on there. And if you buy them, we donate for every pack to Adoption UK. And the other thing you'll find on there at the moment is that we're currently running some parent workshops that are funded by the Pettymore Fund. Here locally, so there'll be some face-to-face ones, but we're running virtual workshops as well that are funded by the National Lottery.
So does that mean people can get on them for free?
People can get on them for free. Right. So 90-minute parent workshops to kind of talk. You'll get a bit of polybagel, you'll get a bit of attachment, you'll get a bit of how to use play to support relationships and get to meet our therapist. So you can sign up for them.
Well, that is, I mean, that's a fantastic resource and opportunity. So Scott, I'm going to put you down for a couple. you know, not judging you, but I've been around you and your kids.
I've been around you and your teenagers, mate. So, you know, that social worker wasn't rubbishing you.
It was a factual statement. very perceptive. Charlotte, thank you so much. And what... The thing that we're trying to pull together is, tell us what the thing we're trying to pull together. Can we say what we're pulling together?
I think we should say what we're trying to pull together,
Go on then.
So as I work with the British Association of Social Workers as a social work representative, kind of representing social workers who work in the field of adoption and fostering, really. And Al and I have been working together to try and, with their support, pull together a guide for social workers, a kind of how-to, what are the most helpful things you could do for families and what should you be thinking about. That's quite exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, we're going to hopefully boil it down to a piece of A5 paper with really simple things like don't judge, be kind, that sort of stuff, you know, really, really obvious stuff. Yeah. Or if you do judge.
Just that stuff that helps social workers feel confident about the basics, that's laying down and doing your assessments. Yeah, really, really helpful.
That's perfect. Well, Charlotte, I think we probably should let you get on because Scott's got to get packing for his little cruise to, where are you going to? I know the Morecambe Bay cruise, the dinghy.
Morecambe Bay. No, the Middle East, dear.
Oh, Middle East.
Dubai, Abu Dhabi. Yes. some warmth in my bones, a bit of a suntan, a few drinkies. Lovely. I'll see you in a fortnight.
You can be sure of it. Excellent. Thank you so much, Charlotte. Thank you so much.